afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a League of Nations, among other internet radio talk shows, Voices of the People, United We Roar. Today is July 20th, 2007. PIVTR is the internet home for anyone seeking quality information and entertainment, as well as answers to many of the multiple concerns that the average person wants to know. At PIVTR, we not only provide experts passionate about their work, we offer you viable content and solutions. PIVTR is also dedicated to helping published mid-list and beginning writers, unknown authors, small businesses, and entrepreneurs to further market themselves, their services, books, and products to the media. And now, from a quarter of three to a quarter after three, let me present to you Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Happiness for Women Only. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Lillian. I'm delighted to be back on our show, Happiness for Women Only, and we're going to have some wonderful discussion in a couple of minutes. Let me just review with those of you following our show that Happiness for Women Only has taken the time over the last 5 months to orient you to many of the aspects that we need to bring into our lives to sustain as women the type of positive attitude that leads to happiness. And for those of you following the show or who are now going to follow the show, don't forget that everything is archived. You can either download it and or download it and put it into a podcast situation where you can go out and jog, or maybe you can even bring us to a Chinese restaurant or something and listen. And Martha Trowbridge has been my major co-host over these months, and she is an expert in inspiration for women in crisis. I consider myself an expert in happiness through the field of positive psychology. I've been in practice 30 years and wrote one of the first books in the field of positive psychology, The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, approximately 9 years ago. And we have worked together many, many times, often bringing you different aspects of the gateways to happiness, which will help you get into the world of happiness and actually learn how to stay in it and sustain yourself. You can find the paper on Gateways to Happiness on the front of my website, enchantedself.com. And so you can go there and download it. You can also go back to the archives, listen to our happiness shows that go through each age level, girlhood, young adult womanhood, middle womanhood, and then the woman 50-plus. And once those are there, and what we've been doing the last few weeks is having some fun interviewing people. This is going to be our third interview, and we'll then, I'm not sure what we're going to do after this, but we'll be back. We're hoping to go for an hour in the fall and really expand Happiness for Women Only. So Martha Trowbridge is on the show with me today again as my wonderful co-host. And our guest, and this is so exciting, I just wish I were where you work, though, is Dr. Dan Baker, Ph.D. He's director of the Life Enhancement Program at Canyon Ranch. So you can see why I said I wish I were there. One of the major spas in the whole world, and here I'm sitting in my office. But anyway, he's written this great book, What Happy Women Know, How New Findings in Positive Psychology Can Change Women's Lives for the Better. So welcome, Dan. It's great to have you on the show today. And Martha, step in. We'll both talk to you. You go first, though, Dan.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. And what a show. And what a great alignment with what you do and what our book's all about. So thank you both for the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners.
Good. Why don't you start the conversation with a few points or things you like to say about what you're doing or what your book is showing, and then we'll have conversation, I'm sure.
Sure, sure. Well, as you probably both know, in 2002, I wrote a book entitled What Happy People Know. And as that book moved on, time passed, one of the things that motivated me to write specifically for women was the research that was beginning to come out. I'm sure you're both familiar with a woman by the name of Dr. Shelley Taylor at the University of California. About 6 or 7 years ago, Dr. Taylor published a research article that said, you know, women respond to stress differently than men do. You've both heard about the fight or flight response. And Dr. Taylor came along and she said essentially that women under stress sometimes do a couple things. They tend to mend and they tend to befriend, which I thought was a very interesting kind of idea and may to some extent explain why women often stay in abusive relationships far more than what would be desirable. And then Luann Bresendean came out, a neurologist, and she started finding out that there were changes in the human brain, in the female brain, differentiating female brain from the male, as early as the first trimester of pregnancy.
Wow.
And it goes on, and it just became so interesting. Then I began to think about the women I'd had the privilege of sitting down in my office to speak with, and it came to me that, yeah, there are differences. And one of the things that differentiated women from men, and I realize generalizations have some danger in them, so I acknowledge that, but most of the time women would come in and the broad topic that they would address are issues around relationships. Men would come in and they would talk about the stress at work or not getting the promotion, or men were far more focused on power and status. Women were more focused on relationships. Now, of course, there were women interested in power and status, and there were men that were interested in relationships. But when you just weighed it out and you looked at the numbers, there was definitely a trend there.
And that makes sense. Go ahead, Martha.
Dr. Baker, why would you think that is the case?
Well, I think a couple things. As you know, I have a strong bioevolutionary predisposition in my writing, and I think that if you look at the evolution of Homo sapiens sapien, modern man and woman, we've been walking around about 80 to 120,000 years. In more primordial times, men were obviously the hunter. There are a few good qualified examples of Amazonian societies, but worldwide and across time, they're very few and far between where the women were the warriors and the hunters. It does occur, but again, it's a rarity. And then women were left to stay at the cave, the hut, the village, whatever, and they had to do several things. One, they had to take care of the business of keeping things organized there, and they had to take care of children. And you ask about what those two things do in terms of communication, which is key to relationships. Well, if you're a hunter, you have to shut up. You have to be stealthy. You can't go after quarry and be talking. If you're doing something that requires cooperation, like taking care of a village or minding children, you have to talk. And it was very interesting. I had an experience many years ago. I had the privilege of presenting out on Monterey Beach, one of the most beautiful places I've ever presented. And I was there on the beach with the otters behind me and the seals in the Monterey Bay, and I was talking about relationships. And after the presentation, there were a number of couples there. There was a bit of a celebration for someone's 50th birthday. And there was a great reggae band and a great meal, and they had three bonfires. And all of a sudden, after all the festivities, it began to die down. I'm sitting there and surrounded by the women who had been part of the presentation, and they are beginning to talk and ask questions and interact and share their opinions. I look around, I realize I'm the only guy in the group. I look down the beach, and around each one of those bonfires, there's a cluster of guys, and they're doing something called fire gazing. They're just spacing off, mesmerized, staring into the fire. Not a one of them is talking or communicating, and here are a host of women who are fascinated, energized, and engaged in what it means to have a quality relationship.
Did you ever see the play The Caveman a few years ago, the one-man show? Basically, it was so hilarious because the guy who wrote it and acted in it just brought all these things out. He would have these scenes where his wife would be attempting to look at him, and she would say things like, look at me now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he would be just trembling, you know, he just couldn't wait till the time was over. And he said that he would run out of words, and he just knew it was going to be awful.
Well, you know, and that's one of the interesting things. I remember I commented about Leanne Bresendine, and she talked about differences in the female brain. Females have a larger hippocampus, for example, and that is the portion of the brain that deals with emotional memory. If you think about it, as women, in terms of your families or your spouses or partners, who makes more of the social arrangements?
Well, the wife, of course. You know, in fact, any man who's smart knows if he's asked about a social thing, he'll say, well, I either have to check with my wife or could you call her? Because he knows he's in big trouble if he tries to make the arrangement.
That's exactly right. And that's very, very common across cultures. So what we know is women are the keeper of relationships. And so where I went with the book in the first step is, women do relationships very well, save for one, and that's the relationship they have with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I really got the genesis of the idea for the book, because they would tell me, you know, what good, bad, and different relationship they would have with their husband or their boyfriend, with their children, with their mother, and they would focus on those kind of things. But when I would ask them, what kind of relationship do you have? Which, how would you characterize your relationship with yourself? Ladies, I got silence in the vast majority of cases. People had to think about it. The women could not give me an answer. But if I said, what's a relationship like with your boyfriend or your husband? Bang, I got it immediately.
I found in my research with women, which was the thrust of my whole Enchanted Self project, that when I would ask women what gave them pleasure and when were they happy and when did they feel whole and questions like that, they would come up with times and they could explain them and share them with me, whether it was going skiing or a garden or talking to grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But they would look at me and often say, you know, I only thought of that because you questioned me. Normally, I'm so busy focusing on other people that I don't even build in those times unless they happen to happen or even think about them or would ever imagine telling someone about them.
Exactly. And what happens, I mean, taking care of other people, I think, has a lot of intrinsic reinforcement. It does feel good, but it also requires energy and the giving of resources, time, and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And what happens if women do not take some time out to give to themselves? In other words, I call it getting in your own line of dispensing care and love.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like writing checks on your checking account without making a deposit. And, of
right.
course, you know what's going to happen. In time, you write enough checks, you're going to get an insufficient fund noticed. And I think women kind of run into that wall from time to time. At the ranch, it was not uncommon for women to talk about they felt guilty about being there because there were things to do at home, they'd left the children at home, and so forth.
Even the money to pay for that ranch, right. I imagine, would be an issue.
You know, it was. Now, of course, you know the demographics of most of our guests, and there are people who will save sometimes several years just to have a experience at the ranch. But for the most part, you know, our largest catchment area was the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And as a New Yorker, you can understand that demographic says people have a lot of disposable income on the whole from that part of the world.
But they
would feel guilty about taking care of themselves. And it reminded me of there was a great rabbi by the name of Hillel
mm-hmm.
who was known for three questions. You remember these questions?
Well, go ahead, so okay. We won't waste time. That would take a little retrieving.
Okay. The first question Hillel posed, and this is 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
If I am not for me, then who shall be? Now, when I ask women about that question, they said, well, isn't that being selfish? And that's absolutely not the case. What Hillel was talking about is self-interest. And what he was saying essentially is there are only certain things you can do for you. At the ranch, we would talk about health. Nobody can move your body for you but you. Nobody can think for you. You will decide what it is you're going to process and think about. Nobody can choose what kind of food you nourish yourself with but you. And so what Hillel was saying is you must take care to nourish yourself, to nurture yourself, so that when you do bring yourself to the table with regard to your family, your work, your community, your friends, whatever, you bring the best you possible. The second question was, however, if I'm only for me, what am I? So which addresses the selfishness. And the third question was, if not now, when?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a very important thing that women be able to distinguish. Guys can make this. Guys are indulgent. I seldom heard a man tell me, I feel guilty about being here. If he had small children at home, or, you know, somebody was sick at home, a parent or something. But the preponderance of that comment came from women that were there.
But, Dr. Baker, don't you think part of that is cultural, or it's what we're taught from a very early age?
Well, you know, I think it is cultural, but I think the cultural influences come from this bioevolutionary background. It is something that little girls are taught. If you think about the games little girls play versus the games little boys play, harken back to your own childhood. What was the nature of the games you played, if I may?
Playing with my dolls.
Yeah.
And going bike riding and roller skating for me.
Okay. All right. Did you bike ride with other people?
No.
Okay.
I went bike riding, I think, to have my own place away from my parents and, you know, sort of be in my own space.
And that was good. And I bet you that has served you well throughout your life.
Oh, very.
Yes. Okay. But you, because of your profession, you've met women, that would be something that they wouldn't even consider.
Absolutely.
Having their own space.
I can't even, well, I shouldn't put it in a negative form. Very often I'll spend weeks or months with a client just helping her perhaps separate out 30 or 40 minutes a week that's going to be her own.
Right. Right. And you think you were asking somebody to walk barefoot across hot coal sometimes.
Right.
And what they, you know, what finally they will come to understand many times at the ranch, because they just feel so much better after 4 or 5 days or a week of eating properly and sleeping properly and being nurtured in the way they nurture so many other people with the massages, the hikes, etc. They begin to feel and see the world differently. And then they begin to understand the importance of self-interest, not selfishness, which is I call it an emotional black hole where the total focus is on the I, me, and mine. And there's no reciprocity. There's no give and take. There's no balance in relationships with somebody that's selfish. But self-interest, terribly important if you want to bring the best you to the table in those other areas of your life that's important.
Now, with the populations that I deal with in my practice and even in workshops, usually once I can stimulate a woman to start to take better care of herself and not to run on empty like a gas tank that has nothing left in it.
Right.
Then what she will face is the anger and the disruption that comes at her from family and friends, even the teasing or mocking. There's so many pressures to restabilize her at the old point where she was. And now she has to learn so many techniques that I call negotiating techniques to just fend off these old influences that are still going to come in at her. And, of course, some women don't have the strength to fend them off, and they just, you know, it's just a one-time luxury, that opera in New York or going away with a girlfriend or something. They don't have the resources to build it in. So,
right, yeah, and they pay a huge price for changing the rules of engagement. And fortunately, you're there to support them. Hopefully, they will find the resolve and the wherewithal to continue the course, because you and I both know that if they stay the course, if they're consistent, that stuff generally subsides after a while, and people readjust.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I think, Martha, you were trying to say something way back. Is it relevant any longer?
Oh, well, actually, it is exactly what you're talking about now. It's the fear. When, Dr. Baker, you were talking about the resistance to self-care of many women, and it's the fear of the sometimes overwhelming adverse response by people in your relational world once you do start to take care of yourself and put yourself on a level equally important to that of others in your life.
I'll even have clients that will say to me, well, you know, I don't earn the money and the husband is earning the money, and we'll go around many, many times on how much she's worth, you know, if you just document doing the laundry, et cetera, but it's a long haul. Really.
Sure, and actually we know there's studies out there that have done it. It ranges about 240 grand a year.
Yeah.
It's a pretty nice upper executive level pay level for women, but they don't think about it that way.
I love the way your book is written. To get back to the book for a minute, there are a lot of really interesting case studies and little vignettes that are really delightful. Here's one that you have about optimism, where you say, here's a question for you. With whom would you rather have lunch? Chicken Little, who is sure to interrupt you and wait staff with urgent warnings about the sky following, or the little engine that could, with a limited but unquestionably sunny four-word vocabulary, I think I can.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cute, and it's a great metaphor. I think I would prefer to eat with the engine.
No doubt about it, because one of the things that happens when you meet the engine, not only do you share, you walk away energized.
That's right. It's funny because I've been working, of course I have my website, and the last 6 months I've been trying to develop a blog. My husband is also a psychologist. He says, and very successful, particularly fighting mental health issues with managed care and stuff like that.
Right.
He says, I don't know what a blog is. So, well, look at me. I know what a blog is. This is great. Yeah, I know what a blog is, but I still haven't quite figured out how to get it really operational the way I wish. But long story short, I spoke to my future nephew out in Silicon Valley who works the web day and night, and he's all of 26, turning 27. But I felt so young and energized by the way he was helping me with my blog. It was like, you know, all of a sudden the whole world opened, and it was a great feeling.
Right, and what we know, we actually begin to study that. There's a great piece of research called The Electricity of Touch, done by a group at the Institute of Heart Math out in Boulder Creek, California. And what we know about the electricity of touch, when you put two positive people within a short distance of each other, that the EKG patterns, the heart rhythms, are reflected. Of subject A are reflected in the EEG, the brainwave, the electroencephalography of subject B. You're in sync.
Wow.
And it's fascinating. Now, we don't know all of what this means yet, but if you think about it, recall those relationships where you can start a conversation with somebody and stop mid-sentence and they pick it up. And it's pretty much close to what you would be finishing.
Yeah, well,
with.
There have been a few, and they're wonderful. You treasure them.
Exactly. And so the question is, what happens if you really start putting the emphasis on focusing on finding those people in life that you have that reciprocity to give you? Because I think that's one of the things why women ultimately hit the wall, if there's not reciprocity, it's because it's too lopsided. It doesn't work to give and give and give without something coming back from time to time.
Absolutely. That's right, and I think that's why for a lot of women, if they can just get away with a girlfriend, even for lunch, of course, the right girlfriend, because there are a lot of girls and women that just want to dump all their problems and, you know, you go down. It's not a good lunch. But where you feel that electricity, then it's even an hour can in get you back for a week.
Now, and that's exactly true. So, you know, one of the things I'd encourage your listeners to do is make a list of who is in their life that when they do spend some time with, when they do interact, that they're energized. They come out of it feeling clear. They see the possibilities. They're more aware of the beauty around them. There's that proverbial spring in their step. And there are people like that out there. And it's interesting that a lot of us just don't simply strategically plan to do that more often, to engage those kind of people in our lives.
Absolutely. I think sometimes it can be self-esteem issues that you're afraid that person, you sense that person really has a certain level. Would they want to be with me? You know, you have to work that through. And then sometimes it's the responsibility. Well, I have so many negative people that I'm responsible for, and I've got to give each one of them something.
Yeah, and that, you see, that is one of the things that I think we have to help women understand, that women do something that men don't. We talk about in the book. They far more often compare themselves to other women, but they pick traits that they're going to lose right from the get-go. In other words, I've seen it in the exercise classes, and somebody will walk out and said, well, you know, my clothes aren't nearly as nice as the woman in front of me, or did you see those two women who were doing better than the instructor, and implying, well, I'm way behind the instructor kind of thing. And so they get into this negative pep rally with themselves because they make these comparisons, and you invariably lose when you compare yourself to another person. Or if you win, you can become arrogant. So comparing yourself to another person is not necessarily a constructive thing to do.
Right.
Comparing yourself today to who you were yesterday. Are you wiser today? Are you more resilient? Are you more patient? Are you kinder? Are you more cheerful? Are you more engaged in learning today than you were yesterday? Compare yourself to yourself. And use that as your baseline for your own personal growth. Not pick out somebody who, you know, lives in a penthouse on the Upper East Side and, you know, has a gazillion dollars at their disposal, because you're going to lose when you do that. And women are more inclined to do that than guys.
Yes, I think that's true. I noticed with my husband over the years, he will never feel jealous or competitive. If we go to a gorgeous home, I'll always say on the way home, get ready. And he'll say, get what, ready for what? And I'll say, the way we'll feel when we walk into our house. You know,
uh-huh.
Because I'm crazy. And I can laugh at it. I understand, you know, the little bit of stuff I've got. But it's exactly that female, that is something that isn't constructive, because we know nothing about, I mean, we don't really know other people and what their drives and goals are. But secondly, if I wanted a certain type of home, I would have spent the last 30 years going for it, and obviously I didn't, you know. So,
right. And so that's one of the things I really encourage women. If you're going to make comparisons, make them to yourself.
Right. But I think that I would like to add from the 7 gateways to happiness that I've developed that one of the ways to get out of this also is once you start to go through the gateway, and I know you talk a lot about this, of good deeds and positive actions and doing more kindnesses in life, it kind of frees you of a lot of this because you're too busy and you're getting positive feedback from lots of ways that you never could imagine that have nothing to do with, you know, clothing or glamour or how someone lives. It's just a whole different level.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Excuse me. Okay.
Martha?
Yes?
Yes. I think that we've talked a lot about this, too, and how helping a woman kind of move into some of her own precious places. And I know we're running out of time, but that's a lot. What Martha, tell Dr. Dan a little bit about your books and how they help women get back to what's special about them.
Oh, yes. Well, I write inspiration for women in crisis, women who are depressed, traumatized, agonized, grief-stricken, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
My material is, it's inspirational, but very much rooted in psychological theory. And
right.
Helping women get from a place where they feel worthless, overwhelmed, and so on, to a place where they can truly self-love themselves and begin to, what I, in my model, rebirth into the women they were born to be.
And you have a lot of exercises and lovely ways of helping women in a totally private way capture some of the best of themselves again.
Yes, which is so important, I think. One of my constructs is the idea we have a sacred inner universe that's very private, in which we can begin at any moment in our existence to develop that really wonderful, precious sense of spirit, of self. I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice.
Oh, okay. So
excuse me.
I think we're all trying to get women to that point and in different styles and different ways. And I really think that your book is a wonderful book, going back to Dr. Baker. Do we have cell phones?
I'm sorry, yes, he has my cell phone. I've got to turn
yeah.
it off here.
Okay.
I apologize.
That's okay. You know, we live in the modern era that no one, you know, you hear someone talking to themselves, we no longer can even think they have any fleeting psychosis. They're just on a cell phone. So
that's the Bluetooth. It's under the hair. We can't see, right?
Right. So anyway, but we're going to wrap up. It's really been a pleasure, Dr. Baker. Do you have anything else you want to say, or do you want to direct people how to find your book and or you?
Well, certainly they can find the book in any of the major bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, those places. Most bookstores can order it if they don't have it, if you're in one of those little corner, lovely little corner kind of bookstores you go to. And probably the best way to contact me would be through the Canyon Ranch website. And really what I want to leave your listeners with is I think the real challenge for women is discover what's always been there, and that's an incredible sense of empowerment.
Wonderful. Beautiful. Yes, I love that, and I would agree 100%. And Martha Trowbridge, thank you again for being my co-hostess.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, Dan. We appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And this is Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, positive psychologist, signing off for now. Happiness for women only, and we'll see you again next week. Bye for now.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You've just listened to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Happiness for Women Only.
Has left the conference.
And if you want to hear her all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.
Dan Baker.
Has left the conference.
The next program coming up is Monica Coleman on a program on global warming. And then at 4:15... What's Happening host Lillian Caldwell will be interviewing Madeline Lewis. So please stick around to listen to those programs, plus programs that will be running all weekend long. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And before you leave, one more little thing for you to put into your hat and wear it out into the world. Our lives are a mosaic of little things, like putting a rose in a vase on the table, by Ingrid Trobisch. Thank you very much for listening. Always keep listening. Things change, so always go back to the website at http://internetvoicesradio.com. Have a grand weekend, and I'll see you in an hour. Thank you.